everybody. Thanks for tuning back into Progressives Abroad. I'm back here live in Oslo, Norway. And don't forget, if you are just tuning in for the first time, or if you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast. And today I'm very excited because on the show we have one of my good old friends from back in Florida. Y'all know I come from Florida, so I talk about that a lot. Mr. Oliver Lucas Guardo on the mic in Spain. And where are you in Spain right now?
So I'm in Madrid, in the capital. Mm-hmm. I've been here since 2010, so 10 years now.
That's wild. Yeah, I think actually it's kind of funny. I think we do have a lot in common, kind of a couple common points where, you know, we both came from South Florida, grew up there, and been both living over here in Europe for about 10 years now. So yeah,
you've been here 10 years too, because you were in Germany first, I think, right? And then...
Yeah, I was in Germany.
A little more than I have.
I was all over the place, man. I was in Germany, and I was in Italy, and I was in Norway and England, and then back around and round and round a loop de loop of Europe. And but been here in Norway pretty stably for a couple of years now, so that's interesting. Interesting experience. But yeah, so like, just give us a little bit of a rundown, real quick. Like, how'd you first end up in Spain?
Yeah, sure. I finished college in 2010, and it was like the middle of the economic crisis or the recession or whatever you want to call it. And I studied sociology, so I felt pretty disenchanted with everything anyways. And I didn't really know what to do with my life. My dad was born in Spain. So I always was like really curious about Spain, but I'd never come here as a kid because my family didn't really travel that much. And so I finished college, I moved home, I worked at a cafe for like a few months, and I started looking at jobs abroad, and I was looking at teaching English either in Chile or here. And I got this position and I moved over. And then I lived 2 years in Madrid. I moved after that to Bilbao, which is like close to France in the Basque Country. And then I moved back to Madrid in 2015. I did my master's, and then I started working in food tours and education. And then after a bunch of stuff, we've ended up here in 2020, and I guess we're all kind of regrouping now. So,
good Lord. Yeah. I mean, it's funny, man, because this is just such a, like, I think for a lot of people, it sounds like, wow, I can't believe you did that. The economic crash and then you moved over here and stuff like that. But it's such a common story. I mean, I have to say it's basically the same reason I first left. I actually went through Korea on the way to Europe.
You were in Korea too. I forgot about that. Jesus.
Yeah, but also for the same reason to go teach language, to teach English. And then yeah, shortly after that ended up in Europe. But yeah, it's this very interesting story that I kind of like to keep documenting among different people who kind of fled the United States after the great economic crash in like that 2008-2010 era, and then ended up over here. And then now here we are again.
I mean, it's interesting though, because like when I left in 2010, I came here, and to be completely honest with you, Spain was like way worse off than the States was. Unemployment here was like way higher and stuff. But I was lucky because English teaching jobs were, I'm not going to say abundant and well paid, but they were like, you could get a job as a 23-year-old teaching English and have like pretty nice like conditions. You weren't going to make a lot of money and get rich or anything, but like you could like, you know, make enough to like enjoy yourself, travel from time to time. And I always live below my means anyways. I'm kind of like an austere person. So yeah, I got, it's funny. Cause like, it's not like I moved to some place that was like not experiencing a recession or crisis, because Madrid was swamped. And all my friends were like, here were really jealous of the fact that I had this like really cushy job making decent pay. But yeah, man, it's crazy. It was a crazy time. There's a whole people, or like a lot of people from our generation, from like, you know, 2008 to 2012, who finished college around that time and were just like, I'm off, and did their like English teaching gig or whatever, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty wild. It is like, I would say one of the consistent stories of our generation that I just keep hearing over and over again. I hear it from a lot of people here too. It's just like, I had to go. I mean, I couldn't get a job anywhere. I had to find somewhere, and kind of the world becomes your oyster, and then and then you find stuff out there. So, and are you still working in education now? Are you shifted over to tourism?
So I got it. So in 2016, I finished my master's in bilingual education with the intention that I was going to get a job at like an international school or, and then I've always been like really interested in food. And I found this job and I applied to work with them as a guide. Well, first as like their customer service person, just to like get a foot in the door. And then I ended up getting a job with them as a guide. So like right after I finished my master's in bilingual ed, I started working in food tourism, which was cool because it was very easy for me. It was pretty good work, like pretty good pay. And it was fun because I was hanging around groups of travelers and kind of like, you know, taking them out to eat and drink and nerding out on food. And then basically I worked with them till 2000. Well, I still work for them technically, but they're not, they're kind of like trying to keep the brand relevant because there's basically nobody traveling. So whereas last year in the high season months of like May, June, July, August, September, and a little bit of October, I was working like as much as I wanted. This year there was literally, I think like 4 or 5 tours happened in Madrid in the entire summer. And most of those people were like living here. Nobody traveled to Madrid this year. So when that happened in March, when global tourism came to a screeching halt, I had to look for more work and I started teaching online English, online Spanish. And then like 2 weeks ago, I got a job at an academy in my neighborhood here. So I'm doing that like during the afternoons and the mornings I have free or I teach online. So that's how I keep busy. Online Spanish and English classes.
Yeah, that's great. I think this is kind of the for a bad pun, the main entree of the day why I wanted to talk to you today, because I'm very interested to hear about, because if you're listening to this podcast before, you know, I also work in the tourism industry and kind of same timeline, man, like was teaching and then I actually stopped teaching to just go full time tourism. And then it was right around that time. Whew. It Corona hit and
there's no money. There's nothing there going on right now. That is dead.
Obliterated.
Totally obliterated. Yeah.
Done. Yeah. I mean, I know up here, about 80% of tourism and tourism related activities have closed down or either gone bankrupt. There's a little piddly bit left, but nothing even on the horizon. You know, some people are hoping maybe next year in the summertime or something, but we shall see. But I'm just curious, like, okay, so, but what I think what's interesting about Spain is that Spain is, I don't know if a lot of people out there know this, but from what I understand, Spain is one of the big tourism hubs of Europe and maybe the biggest, and then of course of the world too. Especially a lot of these people from these more colder northern countries, that is the oasis, especially in the winter time or even in the summertime, people going down there, Spain, Italy. And Spain has been hit like the hardest with the coronavirus, and now it's like creeping up again. So how did that go? What was that experience like right in the beginning when it hit? What was like the response from maybe like your tour company as well as maybe
That's a good question. I had so when the coronavirus stuff started happening, before there was like the proper lockdown here and stuff, I started to hear there were like canaries in the coal mine that were like, oh, this shit's going south. We can curse here, right? I assume.
Oh yeah.
Okay, cool. And I remember that we had like, my company did private tours and public tours, and the private tours like were people that had come here for either corporate events or with their family, and they would want just their group on the tour, and the others would just sign up on it on like what's that, TripAdvisor, that hellacious website. And which you probably hate as much as I do, but
I have a lot of nice reviews about myself on
so TripAdvisor. Do I but I fucking I hate the fucking concept, this like review thing. But anyway, so all of a sudden it must have been like mid-January or late January, all of a sudden bookings just started, people started canceling. And people I knew that worked in the office for Devour were like, this isn't looking good. And I was like, it's not going to be an issue. Super naive. It's not going to be a problem. But I just noticed that my bookings, the tours that I had on my schedule just started dropping like boom, boom, boom. That was concerning. But the public tours kept strong. So basically, like, I think I remember it was kind of dark and I don't want to shit on it, but it kind of struck me as like, especially in hindsight, ridiculous. But the company that I work for, I tried to mention their name, but they wanted to keep like potential clients calm. So they were like, oh yeah, we're still going strong. They made like a hashtag and everything. Like, I'm not going to name it, but they were like, still doing it, still happening. Don't be afraid. Keep travel out here. We're still doing tours. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching that and just being like, ooh, this is weird. And especially in hindsight now with how things went, how sour, how like the far south they went. strikes mm-hmm. me as a bit ridiculous. But anyway, so yeah, people started to realize that things were going so well. And then I remember just like this, probably the week before, what they called the estado de alarma, the like alarm state here, which mm-hmm. is when they like shut down Spain. Yeah, everything just disappeared. Every single tour that I had that went, some of them had like 10 people on the tour, but suddenly went down to 5 to 3 to 2 to 1 to 0. Mm-hmm. And in one case, I think I was the last guide to do a tour mm-hmm. the day before the state of alarm. Mm-hmm. And I had a group of like Canadian tourists who were like in their 70s. They'd like literally just got off a plane. They'd arrived in Madrid. They had no fucking clue what was happening. Everyone else on the tour, which was supposed to be like 9 people, bailed. They showed up and I was like half like astonished that they were there. And I was like, oh my God, I'm really glad you guys are here. And they're like, why? And I was like, I think I'm inside. I was like, be cool. But I was like, because the world is fucking melting right now, you know, oh, no. And we should not be outside. But I didn't say that. I was like, well, you know, there's a lot of cases of coronavirus. And the guys are like old and overweight. And he mm-hmm. looks at me and he's like, which I'm not saying, I'm not, that's relevant though. Cause these are people who might not have fared well had they caught the virus.
Yeah.
And I wonder about this, but anyways, they were like, oh yeah, well, I don't know. It's just a small thing. It's not going to be a big thing. And I was like, I realized at that moment that they had not been watching the news.
And so, but when was that? Was that in what time?
Let's see. I don't remember when the shutdown was, but it was like March 11th or something. This was probably
right around that. Yeah.
March 9th or March 10th. This was like the day before the president of Spain went on TV and was like, the world is over, you know? So
yeah, that was,
I remember being like, this, we shouldn't be doing this tour right now. All the places that I took them were basically only full of kind of like aloof Americans who didn't really know what was going on. And all the bartenders and bar owners were like, they're like, I'm shutting down tomorrow. Like, this is crazy. I think it was 2 days before. And I remember taking them around and just being like, I didn't have a mask. They didn't have a mask. No one had masks, you know, because masks were not a thing then. Yeah. And then I got home. I put in my post-tour report, which like, you know, it gives them the numbers and how much you spent at each place. And then I remember just being like, as time went on, like whatever happened to those two? Like they were supposed to go down to Malaga, to Southern Spain, to like golf for like a month. I really hope that they made it all right and stuff. But yeah, I imagine they probably got on one of those repatriation flights to get them back to Canada, or they hang out here in quarantine for 3 months. I don't fucking know.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy to hear this story from you, because it was kind of a similar timeline here. I mean, I distinctly remember my last tour, which was just this, again, kind of, you know, not in the best shape, large group, huge group of people from Belgium on some kind of office tour, doing some walking tour on a rainy, sloppy day here in Oslo in like early February. And at that point in time, it was weird because I think, you know, because what a lot of people maybe don't realize too is that, so when you were up here in Northern Europe, you started hearing the stories down in Southern Europe. So it just came like a week later, man. Maybe, you know?
That's crazy that you mentioned that, because we were like a week or two behind Milan. And so everybody, like, there's a lot of like similarity between Spain and France. And a lot of my friends who had friends in Milan, like, were getting like these reports from like, oh, this is what's happening right now in Spain. Shit, we were there like 2 weeks ago. And so they were like, it was like, they were like a message from the future, basically.
It was.
And I remember like the weekend before things got really heavy, I went out with some friends. We went to a club and partied and like, you know, got home at like 7. And my friend wrote, her friend who was a doctor in Milan, he's like, you were at a club, you were at a disco last night? And we were like, yeah. She was like, yeah, it was really fun. And he was like, that's like the last thing you should be doing right now. Like those are the like super spreader, you know, like breeding grounds for the virus. And there's a possibility that I had it in February from a night when I went out, because it got to Madrid in like late February. So that's when it started just like, you know, multiplying and spreading like crazy. But yeah, it was, there were a few people living in Milan were kind of like a few, like a week or two ahead of us. So they were kind of telling us how things were playing out, and they were just, it was just like the pattern exactly like to a T would play out in Madrid. I guess the same for you guys in Oslo then, right?
And I think what was really crazy, I don't know if you saw this, but when we first, I mean, I remember we were in my, like in my office, we were in the shop. We were getting emails. Cause I'm checking the emails all the time for all the bookings, and we were getting emails even in like late January or maybe sometime February from China, actually, these Chinese tour operators. And they were saying, due to like the like situation in China right now, we're canceling all our tours. Wow. And we started getting little chirps from like some tour operators in Australia and stuff, because they get a lot more like Chinese tourists. And it was off in the distance that we're really early on, like let's say like mid-February, really just like, whoa, that sounds wild. And I remember we were sitting there talking about, well, okay, good. We don't actually get a lot of tourists from China on our tours.
We didn't either. We had a mostly North American like clientele based.
Yeah, we didn't do like Chinese language tours, but a lot of Oslo does. So we were kind of hearing these chirps, and like it was just so far out in the distance. You're just like, well, it's going to be a little different this year. Probably we're getting all these cancellations from some other countries like Australia and stuff like that. And then slowly but surely. And I remember, just like you said, went out the weekend before, and then right around that March 12th, that week, especially the week after, we're in the lockdown on March 16th, and it's just done. Like businesses started closing down. All right, we're shut down for the whole year, and who knows for how else long.
But your company hasn't like bailed out. They're not like, we're done, we're finished. They're gonna try and hold weather the storm, I guess, or.
No, well, that's interesting. That's what I was going to ask you about next, how your government's helping out, because I know that the Norwegian government, I would say, was handled it a bit clumsily at first. And
most governments did, you know, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, they weren't ready for this.
Unprecedented, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one thing I tell a lot of people is that I don't really find that, like, you know, here in Norway, they have like such a strong leadership or anything like that. But thank goodness a lot of these unemployment systems and like healthcare systems already exist, because people were able to like kind of fall on that. And then they made some adjustments within those systems. But yeah, I mean, what they did, you know, with the tourism industry here is they kind of just. Here, the tourism industry is important, but it's not like the most important thing here. So it really got kind of the.
It is.
Yeah. So here we got kind of the. Exactly. Yeah. Here we got kind of the poopy end of the stick. So actually, a lot of tourism companies, like the one I'm working at, had to go out of business. So we actually had to, at first they did supplement a lot of businesses with help from the government to like stay open, or like to like be able to pay the bills to wait out the pandemic and like open up back later. But it didn't really help out seasonal businesses so much. My company that I work at was mostly based on seasonal income. So unfortunately, we had to go out of business with hopes of opening up, like, reopening again. But I'm curious, how was it in Spain with like such a, like on a general level with, you know, helping people who are going out of business and also on the tourism level?
Yeah, I mean, tourism's really big here. It's a huge industry. And I think one of the things that people have learned from this whole thing is like, it's concerning that such a large sector of the economy is one industry, because when that industry fails, you know, and there's been like people calling for like, I don't know, conscientiousness about this issue. Like there's like, we can't be Northern Europe's playground, you know, here in Southern Europe. And so this kind of like called attention to that, because it's like, if we did all of a sudden one year we didn't have that income, and Spain had all these like kind of attempts to like lure people to Spain during the summer to kind of recuperate some of the money they lost that was like they were expecting. Yeah. But I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen the numbers, but I don't even think there was 5% of the amount of visitors this year that there had been the year before. I don't know, but to put a number out there, huge fall in visits from tourists. And so the government gave a lot of loans out. I don't know, because I didn't get any, because I was what's called autónomo, which is a freelance worker. And so I wasn't. Mm-hmm. I probably could have applied for some of the aid, but I took myself off the like freelance regimen, so I wasn't paying the taxes for it. When I saw that things went really south, I was like, all right, to my account. And I was like, hey, take me off the thing. I don't need to be paying these taxes right now if I'm not working. And that was kind of a mistake because I might be able to get money. But in the end, I was fine because I started doing enough classes. And actually throughout the quarantine, I started to build up kind of like my portfolio of students and I was fine. But yeah, okay. Friends that were working exclusively as guides, man, they, you know, some of them were able to get some social aid from the government. But yeah, if you were a freelance worker during this, man, you're fucked.
Fucked. that was a big problem we had here too. Cause, I was lucky cause I was on contract, but most of the guides were kind of, screwed more for lack of a better word.
Cause the problem of the gig economy, man, it's extremely precarious, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's definitely something we need to think about, big time, but I'm curious, like what is, for like people in general, just in Spain, like how is the like unemployment system there? Is it, how do people get by?
So if you have a work contract and you have what's called like, if you've like paid into it for long enough, after a year or something of having worked for a company and paying taxes with a nómina, with like a pay slip, you're eligible for what's called paro, which is like unemployment basically. And I probably have some accumulated from when I worked with jobs that had contracts that were like, you know, with employers. Mm-hmm. But because of my situation before then, I couldn't opt for that unemployment check. But there were the odd in tourism, the odd guide was the guy who had a contract. And then as soon as the company went south, if they were fired, they could get unemployment. But then there's this other thing that the Spanish government rolled out with all this, which is called ERTE. And I think it's called a furlough in English. And it's like, we're going to basically stop paying you. I think the company had to pay like 40%, the government paid 60%, and then that was supposed to hold you off through like the low season months. But then as we have seen, the low season has not ended. There's been no comeback. So I don't know where that's at because I'm not following it because it doesn't affect me and it's just kind of too much of a bummer. But there's still a whole bunch of like people that are like on ERTE, not expected to go back to work. And so those people are going to start like hitting up the state for their unemployment, and that's where the problem's going to be because the state's going to have to pay out huge amounts of money for massive amounts of unemployment. So
yeah, but do you see things like, you know, for example, I'm going to bounce it back to like where we see back in our home country, like do you see things like a lot of people being, you know, kicked out of their houses because they can't pay rent?
They put a moratorium on evictions, which was really cool when this whole thing happened. So during the state of alarm, you could not evict somebody, which was cool. I mean, in general, in Europe, there's more of a social net than there is in the States. And I think that that's, as a progressive, I think that's really key. And having a more like equitable and safe and fair government or democracy. So yeah, I don't think it's as crucial as it is. Like people aren't going to go hungry here per se. Whereas in the States, you work in hospitality and your restaurant closed. I remember friends, but especially even in West Palm Beach where we're from, I remember they were interviewing some people who ran restaurants and they were just like, they had to lay off overnight their entire staff. And a lot of those people were almost ineligible. We're basically ineligible, I think, for unemployment. And I mean, I don't think there's anything that kind of drastic here.
That crude, yeah.
But there were a lot of people here who were like, obviously, like myself included, were like, how am I going to make money? What am I going to do? I had to completely regroup, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. I'm doing the same thing right now. In fact, we all are. in fact, if you're listening to this podcast right now, please subscribe. you're trying to help me get through this pandemic. It is interesting. I feel when I look back at like our home country, when I talk to like friends and family back there, I feel very like, it's very sad kind of in some ways situation, because from what I hear more and more obviously the whole situation's disorganized and stuff like that, like that's been pretty obvious, but I also hear this like big difference from over here to over there, where over there people feel very responsible to like go back out and stimulate the economy. Have you heard anything like this,
like Americans single-handedly wanting to like bring back the economy?
Yeah.
That's like a really naive American, in my opinion, that's like a really naive American notion of like, we can bring back the country. It's like, okay, go for it. Give it a try. Well,
but I mean, it's kind of, but the crazy thing is that, I mean, yeah, it's, it, I mean, at first it sounds kind of naive, but it, the other thing, there is no system. Like I said before, like, one thing I really realized during this time is that, like, when I look at the leaders of Norway, like, people might find this surprising to say, but I don't find them very, like, strong leaders when I look at the prime minister. In fact, I think that they, in many ways, when it comes to coronavirus, they take kind of a, what I call a soft Trumpian stance. Like, they're not so convinced on it, and they're not so like, they're not telling everybody to wear a mask and everything like this. They're very like wishy-washy. But what is in place here is already like a stable healthcare system that everybody has access to, and a stable like unemployment system, right, that if you need, like, sounds like similar to Spain. Like, if you need it, you can do it, and it will, it's like,
equitable. Well, I mean, whereas I think one of the main things that I think is one of the things that most pains me about America that I just don't, I can't get into my head, is the healthcare system in America. And at least like, I thought about, I don't want to go home. I was thinking about going home during the quarantine to like spend some time with my family. And I was like, I don't want to go home, because if I were to get sick, then I have to pay for it. And a lot of the like insurance companies aren't covering, right? If you're on travel insurance, aren't covering.
Dude, I have the same problem.
So right, I was like, I'm not going, I'm keeping my ass here, where if I get sick, I don't have to worry about health bills. And so I think that thing, the concern about people getting sick and having to pay for it, I think that this whole crisis has shone light a little bit on kind of the deep problems of the American healthcare system. Because here, when people lost their jobs and when people were like, you know, not able to go to work, the last thing they were concerned about is like medical bills. Because that's just, in America, that's just a complete fucking mess. And so, yeah, I don't know if I answered your question. It's kind of like,
yeah, no, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, dude, and I have to say, and I'm glad you brought that up. It's refreshing to hear that from somebody else. Cause I've been explaining this, to like my friends and family back home lately, where I'm just like, dude, like, cause some people say, oh, well, you probably won't get it in your young. I'm like, dude, like literally my insurance company, like I have a travel insurance that works like globally that I have here based in Norway. And they usually will, the whole reason I have it is because they'll cover me when I go to the United States. And right now they're like, sorry, we will not cover you. USA is like a red zone right now. So I'm like, so literally if I go, like the same thing you said, if I go over there right now, then I mean, you risk getting infected. It's highly infectious.
Likely I'd get it here anyways, because this case is in Madrid. I was thinking right now, about really that. Fucking high, but you know.
It's a little bit, right now at least, it's a little bit, it's a massively different situation than we have up here. But still, this remains the same. It's like, if you go there right now and they're not going to cover you, then you're going to be, I'm like, up the creek with no paddle, you know, like I'm sitting here.
We're young, so if we got it, we'd be all right. I don't think we'd be hospitalized, but imagine the odd case that we got a complication, you had to go to the hospital, and all of a sudden you have like a $15,000 bill that you and I will not be able to pay. You know, like,
and at the same time, then you're like, and then at the same time, it's, say you did go over there and then you're like, oh, I got corona, I need to quarantine myself. What am I going to do, that at my parents' house maybe I should go back to Norway. Oh, they're not going to let me in right now.
I'm lucky because I have both passports, so I can come and go between the two countries as I.
That's true. That's
good. I don't have to worry about, like, because like right now Americans, as per my understanding, are not actually allowed into Spain unless they're like residents here. But I just fly with both passports, so it's like, whatever.
Yeah. So yeah, you're in a unique situation, but still, it's a very good point with the health insurance. I see, man, I could have you on all day, but I see that I'm getting close to the time where I got to go catch my bus. But just a few words.
Of course, we should definitely do this. I'd do this again. To do it again. Yeah.
A few words on the, you know, election time is coming, and I'm trying to capture people's progressive perspectives from abroad about.
Oh God!
We don't need to go too deep into it, but I'm just
willing
curious
to answer any question you want.
I'm just curious on your opinion, because what I see right now is, shifting gears here. I mean, I think a lot of us are probably very. I'm assuming you're a Bernie supporter. reporter. I think we
talked about this before. Yeah. You know, how that ended.
Yeah. Whatever that means now, but in the past. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
And I'm thinking, you know, what I see now is there's a big division, you know, like people got really pissed off after Bernie got kind of screwed in the primaries. And yeah,
it sucked because Biden came out of the shadows, who I find personally like a weak candidate. I mean, he's just like your career politician who represents very moderate, very, very moderate, you and I both fundamentally believe, and a lot of people from our generation, that we need some very radical changes in America. And it was so refreshing. I was talking about this with somebody the other day, that Bernie Sanders was really nice, because if you look at Joe Biden's past, he's changed. Like, he signed that sweeping crime bill in the 90s and was all behind it to basically incarcerate black people. Like, let's look at it as what it was. That's what happened with it. And Bernie Sanders has been against that. Bernie Sanders has been consistent for his entire political career. And that's a real rarity. And so, yeah, when Biden won, I voted for him. I've already sent in my ballot, and I will continue to vote for anybody who runs against Trump. But yeah, it was a huge disappointment. It just felt like there was a moment, or there was maybe like a month, when it looked like Sanders was going to get the nomination, which was going to be mind blowing, tantamount to like when Obama won, because that was probably the most radical thing I ever experienced as an adult. That was the first election I ever voted in. And yeah, I thought that we were going to have Bernie Sanders as a candidate. And that was like, we would have had a new direction for American politics. We would have had what I would call the emergence of like a real left, because a lot of my European friends say here, it's like America doesn't have a proper left like we do in most European countries.
Interesting.
And it seemed like we were going to have a political party that was actually proposing some proper left policies. And so, I don't know, with all this coronavirus stuff, Joe Biden's talking about the government footing the bill for some of the medical stuff. And that seems like reasonable and necessary right now.
Required.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be that annoying millennial who lives abroad, who is socialized medicine is the best, because it's it's deeply frustrating for me that in America, the issue of socialized medicine is so taboo, because it's like a no brainer for me, man.
It goes back to the basic, like, we can do it, you know what I mean? Like, well, how can you say somebody comes to a hospital?
If America loves this, like, we can do it mentality, and we'll come back, and like, man, of course, you just need the political will to do it, you know? But I don't know. It's like we saw what happened when Obama tried to do a version of socialized medicine, how like horribly that went over with a large swath of the American public. And so I don't know, that this whole, the last like 10 years living abroad has been weird for me, because it's kind of forced me to come to terms with certain realities about the country that I grew up in. That like when Trump won, I was like, oh, I had my fingers were off the pulse entirely. Like, I don't know my own country, kind of. And I've been listening to a lot of podcasts right now about white supremacy, not because I'm a white supremacist, but because I think it was easy to not understand the severity and the gravity of the situation. Yeah. But white supremacy is something in America right now that, as a result of having a black president for 8 years, white people are fucking scared. And that's what brought on Donald Trump. It's one of the main things, I think. It pains me to say it, but the harsh reality is that's one of the main factors that led him to being the president. I really believe that. And we went off left field here entirely, but I've come to terms with the fact in the last like probably 5-6 years that it's just like the country that raised me, I don't understand in many ways. And I'm not trying to sound like elitist here or thumb my nose at it, but there's just been things in the last couple of years that have just been like, wow, I don't understand a lot of what's going on there. Because you probably didn't expect Trump to win either in 2016.
Well, actually, it's, you know, it's funny. Okay, so I have a little different view on that because, well, but I think you said a very, I think you sound the opposite of elitist. You sound like you're admitting that there's things I don't understand. And that's actually, I think that's something in our, I don't know, our heritage that's a lot of people, a lot of our American heritage, where it's a lot of hard for people to say that sometimes. Like, I admit it, like, I didn't realize this. I was just thinking as you were telling the story that actually the last time I mean, we've seen each other since, but the last time we saw each other in Madrid was right before the election.
Was and, that when it was? 2016?
Yeah, right. Late Jesus, October.
Man,
yes.
It was long ago. That's
literally
crazy.
This time, like 4 years ago, I was in Madrid hanging out with you guys. Wow, and I remember, I remember talking to you, and I was talking to Vince, and I remember especially I was talking to Vince, and I remember saying, I don't know, man, I think that I have this bad feeling because, for me, and this goes back to my days back in the States where, I mean, I also listened to a lot of right wing stuff just to, like, you know, get my eye on the ball and stuff like this.
I can't stomach it, but yeah, good for you. Yeah.
But one thing that really stuck out in my mind, because I remember during the Obama election, I was doing documentaries at FSU at that point in time, and I was actually doing a lot of like anthropological research in the communities surrounding. I knew some people out there, so I was kind of like out there hanging with them. Let's say people of the a different political persuasion, much further to the right, and I knew tons of people out there that were just like. I remember we were at a eating chicken wings somewhere back in the day. I'm vegan now, everybody, but this is back in the day. We were out in like the county somewhere out in the countryside. And I remember Obama on the screen, and I was sitting at a table of people who were just like, I will never vote a blank
and they used
to the Oval Office. Yeah, exactly. Wow. And
yeah, I never heard that. I have to be completely honest. Like, I live in a bubble. My parents are pretty liberal. My dad's an immigrant. Mm-hmm. most of my close friends growing up, and a lot of my friends in my neighborhood in a similar situation. And so, mm-hmm. I think I missed that one entirely. I have my mom from Colorado, and she like went to high school in Colorado. And so my whole life, I'll take trips out to Colorado to go visit my grandmother when I was younger. She's not alive anymore. And I remember going out there and seeing a side of America that like I didn't belong to, and being like, oh, this is weird. There's some weird shit. Like, I saw a bumper sticker in like 2009 or something, or 2008, of Obama's face on a truck, of Obama's face next to a monkey's face. And that was a moment where I was like, I probably should have realized, like, wow, there's some really deep seated racist shit going on here. But as a white passing guy, like I just didn't live it the way that a lot of other people did, and I was super naive, man. This has been something, but a lot of people were in the last couple of years, I think. The like,
interesting.
I don't know. I guess you saw it because you were out in the countryside. You were out talking to people who were like being candid about their feelings about him. I totally missed that.
No,
and I feel really embarrassed to say that out loud, but yeah.
Yeah, no, but it's a good thing to realize, because there are still people that are, I would say, you know, and what we're talking, I mean, I, there are still people that were, that are part of this, you know, what the right would call it would be like, you know, the East Coast, the coastal liberals, you know what I mean? Like, living on the coast, and they don't know what's kind of happening inside. It's a real thing. I mean, But it's interesting because, yeah, I mean, that's what this election, if you weren't aware of it before then, that's what this election showed us in the past. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens next, because I think now what we see what's happening is like a massive fractioning of the left, you know, because you got a lot of people who are also leaving the Democratic Party. I mean, I was super pissed off after the Super Tuesday massacre and all that kind of stuff.
But it sucks for us to vote for Joe Biden, frankly, man. Like, I don't believe in anything that he's a career politician. He goes back and forth on issues. He's palatable because he's a white man. He's not particularly well-spoken. He's kind of riding on the coattails of Obama. The point when he went on a black television show and said something to the effect of, if you're black and you don't vote for me, you're not black or something.
Yeah, he was on the Breakfast Club.
I'm like, why didn't you sit down with Barack Obama for this and like have him coach you through some things you should not say? Because that's verbatim what you should not say. And watching him fumble through some things like that, it's just like, this is the guy. This is the guy that I've been forced to fucking vote for. It's like, give me a fucking break, man. So
yeah, and that's the thing. A lot of people. The thing that's interesting.
I voted for him, and I'll fucking do it again because I can't. Mm-hmm. I can't fucking imagine another 4 years of this shit. This shit is the most surreal political situation I have ever lived through. And I wish we could go into the future and see how this will be spoken about by historians, because this shit is dark. It's dark.
Yeah. My greatest fear, I mean, yeah, just to be clear, I also sent my ballot in. I voted for Biden. I had to hold my nose and do it, but I did it. And I mean, I'm not going to hold it against anybody who does, because I know there's a lot of disaffected people now. I'm not going to hold it against anybody that decides to vote however they want to vote, because I know there's a lot of third party voters out there now. But
we got to vote. You've got to vote for Biden. I think.
Yeah, I mean. Especially living in Florida, man. Like, if you're in a swing state, like, you really got to, because I mean, I don't think that the world, on a very just caring level, the world can handle, like, just the presence, the psychological presence of Trump. There's a lot of shit that's wrong with the Democratic Party. In fact, I think they're both pretty much part of the same party, like the business party, you know. But I mean, if he was working at, like, I always give this example to people. If he was working at my tour company, or if he was working at your tour company, and you had an employee that screwed up that much, like, you wouldn't care. You would get just another person to work there, even if they weren't the best person for the job. You'd at least give them a try, you know.
So I mean, it's surreal, the whole thing. I never could have expected this to, I mean, like, we came of age during the Bush years, right? And that shit was crazy because he's like a war criminal, though. Like, the stuff that Bush and Cheney were doing in the Middle East was like war crimes, in my opinion. But like, at least they were like they were Republicans by, like, they had this coherent kind of Republican like policy, which was balanced budget, Christian, like Christians. They were like outspoken Christians. And then this guy Trump comes in and it's just like, he throws all that out. There's no, like, if you're like a by the book balanced budget, minimal regulation Republican, like, I don't know how the fuck you're voting for Donald Trump. Like you need to seriously ask yourself, like, I don't subscribe to that political ideology about the like a free market and minimal regulation but like, if you are one of those Republicans, I respect those people as long as they're not like homophobes and fucking racists. But I don't know how a Republican like that can be voting for Donald Trump, because he doesn't have this coherent conservative. All he is basically a fearmonger and a fucking racist. I don't know. Trying to get back on the train again, but it's surreal, and we all have to fucking vote. But maybe if he loses, I'm also concerned about what's going to happen with his fans who are armed to the teeth, really angry, really, really motivated right now, organized. Like, and this is the other thing that there's a podcast called Motive that I recommend everybody listen to. I don't know how many listeners you have, but they should all listen to it. It's coming out of WBEZ in Chicago. And it's about, the newest season is about white supremacist skinhead racists in the 80s from Chicago. And I knew as soon as I started listening to it that they were going to transition into how that's happening now. And that's exactly what happened. Like, they organized in the 80s the same way that they're organizing now. And there is a very concerning resurgence of white supremacist neo-Nazis that are basically what they call boots to suits. And they went from, like, you know, shaved heads and Doc Martens to suits. And we're talking about educated, in some cases educated, well-to-do white people who are actively organizing right now for, like, in some cases, like, hoping that there is some sort of civil war or like civil.
Yeah.
And it's like and I'm concerned pathetic. That if Trump loses, they're all going to go off the fucking rails. And I don't want to sound hyperbolic or, like, you know, but it's a concerning time in America, to say the least.
Yeah, I'm very concerned too. And I say, let's leave it at that for today. That's a good cliffhanger. I think we should get together and it's sure. Very dark, but
good. I feel like I don't have much to say, but I'm happy to sit down and talk to you, man. It's awesome.
This is all we're doing, man. We're just sharing progressive perspectives from around the world. And I think that's a good place to leave it, because the election's coming up real soon. So maybe we should catch up like right after the election and see what world we're living in then.
We'll see. Yeah, I'd be happy to, man. I'd love to.
Not too far away. Cool. Okay. So Mr. Guardo, thanks so much for coming on the show today. You can stick around for a minute if you want to chat for a second. But we're going to close it up for today. Everybody, thanks so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. I've been wanting to get you on for a while because I know you got interesting stuff to say. And everybody, if you're listening out there, don't forget to subscribe. Check out all the rest of our episodes wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on YouTube, Progressives Abroad. And you can check out our other podcasts I've been working on lately, the Transnational Perspectives Podcast. So otherwise, get out and vote, and see you next time. Yeah, peace.